Welcome to the Student of the Game Fire Podcast with your host, Danny B. Today's guest is Kamal Phillips, 17 years of career experience, second-generation firefighter, a captain on Engine 4 with Norfolk Fire Rescue. Kamal had zero intentions of becoming a firefighter. During his junior year in college, things weren't working out. His father told him if his plans didn't make, he was going to become a firefighter. His first day in recruit school on a lunch break, Kamal was not feeling the journey he was in. But his mother told him to do it for at least 1 week, then they can both evaluate it. Fast forward to today, and obviously things worked out for Kamal. One of the main gems that stood out in this interview was the fact that all Kamal needed was for someone to believe and show him the route he needed to go, which laid down the groundwork to where he is now. My favorite quote from Kamal is, "No matter where you grew up or what you look like, if you want to do it, there are avenues to do it." With that, I present Kamal Phillips.
Captain Kamal Phillips, Norfolk fireman, almost 17 years this September, currently riding and assigned to Engine 4. I've answered this question quite a few times, but you know, how did this come about? How did Kamal become a fireman? And honestly, I am a second generation, but my father was pretty much the catalyst behind that. So I was away at college at VCU, Richmond, Virginia, huge university. It was right around the time that it had transitioned into the place that you wanted to be. So I was right there before the Final Four show, the Sweet 16, you know what I mean? So it was like everything was turning and it was fun. It was a fun time. So long story short, by my junior year, things didn't become difficult for me. They just required more focus and more work. And I was not willing to put that in at that age. You know what I mean? And my father, you know, he kept tabs on me, even though he allowed me to be a man and make some mistakes. And he kept tabs. And he always said, if you mess up, you're coming home. And you're going to fill out an application for the fire department. And I put zero eggs in that basket, zero whatsoever, like none. It was like, I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to mess up. So I messed up, obviously. And so our process tends to be approximately a year long. And this is when people still wanted to be in the fire department. Again, I'm oblivious to this whole idea of even being a fireman. I don't have no idea what they do. My father was very, I wouldn't say private. I feel like if we would have asked him, hey, what do you do on a day-to-day basis, Dad? He would have explained it. But he's one of those people that you have to pry it out of him. You know what I mean? He comes from a background of being a corrections officer in Rikers Island in New York. So, you know, he views everything as a job, as an opportunity to try something new and make some money at the same time. So I wouldn't even say my dad was super passionate about the job. But once he got in it, like myself, it was like this is the best job in the world. So anyway, I fill out the application. I'm currently working at Sprint. I'm slinging cell phones, Short Pump, Virginia, just outside of Richmond, maybe 20 minutes. And I begin the first portion of the interview process. I come home. I do the physical agility test, which, you know, old guys always complain. I feel like it was way more difficult, you know, when I went through versus now. It was a standard. It's like, if you didn't make it past this time, you're out. Mm-hmm. We got 150 more, you know what I mean? Waiting to try to get a slot here. So I came home. I was in great shape still. I was still playing basketball. So I felt like I was in the best shape of my life, coming off a very, very strict basketball coach who believed in conditioning over skill level, effort over, you know, the offensive kind of attack to the game. And so I almost had a militant background before, just based off Coach Rob. And shout out to Coach Rob. Thank you so much for the discipline. I learned a lot from him. So I did well in the physical agility test. It was easy to me. It was fun. And then right from the physical agility, we went to the written test, which is general aptitude, you know, nothing specific. You can't prepare for it. So I did that portion. And still, I'm not gung-ho on this whole idea of being a fireman. I don't know what my father, he never spoke about it. I don't know what it means to be a fireman. I am just a young basketball player that wants to make it in business. Everyone majors in business in college and has no idea what direction they want to take it in. So I was one of those guys. So, throughout that year, I'm still working at Sprint. I would come home, do the BPAT. I would come home and do the lie detector test. I would come home and do this and that. And before you know it, I'm like, September rolls around. And I remember it's like it was yesterday. I was closing my drawer. It was a Sunday. I was closing my drawer, September 14th, 2008. Closing my Sprint drawer, handed it in. And I had already had my car packed to the brim in Richmond from everything I own, which was 80% sneakers, you know what I mean? And one suitcase. And I headed home, man. And the very next day, September 15th, 2008, I began the Fire Academy. And I will say that I was ill prepared. You know what I mean? I walked in there. This was the era where you had big jeans, big t-shirts. I had my earrings in. I had no idea the hallway I was going to walk through of officers. You know what I mean? With this stern look on their face, like they hated me already. I couldn't understand it. This is new. This is completely new to me. My father explained the academy. This is how my father explained the academy. You're going to work out a little bit. You're going to do some studying. You do this about 6 months, you'd be out on the street. That's what he said. He was so wrong. So wrong. I got people looking at me in this very first day, like, what the hell is he doing here? Everybody's dressed right, dress, at least a flannel, some of my country cohorts, you know what I mean, that I now love to death. You know what I mean? And some of these folks were lieutenants in volunteer departments already at age 20. I had no idea what that meant. So I'm just in a room, just we're gonna see, I'm gonna give it a shot. So obviously, we go to lunch that day. It was the only day that you could drive, this, and you had until the end of day to decide, are you going to stay? You want to I go to McDonald's. I remember which one it was. It was on Granby Street. It was lunchtime. I had a Big Mac number one. I called my mother, complete discontent. I was not pleased whatsoever. So I said, Mom, it's not for me. And she paused for a minute and she said, well, look, just do me a favor. Just go for the first week. Do the first week. You can do that. It's not a problem for you. And if you don't like it at the end of that week, we'll both go to your father and tell him he's not doing it. I need her backing. You know what I mean? Because I was 20, 21. Still had a healthy fear of my father and the potential disappointment that he would have in me. If I do take my own route and it doesn't work out, I feel like that would have been a huge disappointment for him. So again, I had no real direction. So why not? So I made the agreement with my mom. I finished my lunch. I went back. And the rest is pretty much history, man. The rest was pretty much history. Again, I stepped into a completely different atmosphere than what I was used to, man. I mean, it was the not alone just the paramilitary environment that we strive to to kind of replicate. It was the accountability about it, man. It was the teamwork. I'm coming off, I still love team sports. And I realized that you accomplish nothing doing what we do without collective, without the collective. So again, I gave it a shot. I stuck in it, and we are here now, my friend.
Okay. So what changed at the end of that week that kept you going?
Number one, the fact that I could do it, number two, that it was challenging, which I didn't even realize I enjoyed at such a young age, a challenge, you know what I mean? We always use the word competitive, but I think they go hand in hand. And I felt like this is somewhere, and I knew I was having a kid also. So let's not forget that. I knew that we got to start putting feet to street, you know what I mean? So we have to be able to provide no matter, and I had no idea what that looked like, but I knew I had to provide, you know what I mean? And again, so I had a lot of my I had a lot of potential for letting folks down, and I didn't want to do that. And I thought this was a great direction to head in. by the end of that week. By the end of that week.
All right. So you complete, what was it, 6 months?
No, our academy then was almost just shy of 8, so around 7.5.
Okay.
We got out in April. So we September 15th to April 15th or 20th, I believe.
Okay.
So it's almost 9 months. Damn.
You get out of the academy. What was your first assignment?
My first assignment was Station 10. Fresh out of the academy. Again, I have no idea, you know, what station it is to be at. What does it mean? What type of demographic are they serving? I had no idea about any of this. So first assignment, Station 10. And my class was one of three or four classes that the intention of the battalion chiefs and the shift commanders was that they wanted, as a new person, they wanted you to get a taste of each district. Each district is unique, you know, and everyone knows that. Every district is known for what they do, or known for the type of call volume I have, or known for the type of responses that they cater to. So, you know, we were going to go from Battalion 3 to Battalion 1 to Battalion 2. So Station 10 was my first assignment. I always reserve judging about that statement. It was just I don't think that it was an environment for me to be introduced to first. You know what I mean? There was a lot of old guys. There was a lot of complaining guys, which became the norm for me. There were a lot of guys who opposed authority and guys and gals. So it wasn't the best situation for me. So I was actually happy to transfer from there to Station 1, which is our downtown station. Volume wise, it's probably number 3-4 now. And I got to actually see what the people of Norfolk were about, like the community that we serve. You know what I mean? Unfortunately, the underprivileged, and you know, because you know, any downtown area is going to have its quality of like an urban, mm-hmm. more of an urban rich area. So you can see everything. You're in the shit, as we call it. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Now, and due to our close proximity to the hospital, we would be able to pick our patients up, drop them off, and we're right back in service. So that kind of contributed to the higher call volume, which everybody jokes about all the time. It's like, oh, one is busy, but you 10 steps from the hospital. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. But that only increases your call volume and your patient experience and just riding the medic. But that was where I learned a lot, or the most. And then from there, for the last 4 months of that rotating or revolving assignment, I went to Ocean View. Well, it's considered Ocean View Station 9. It's kind of like middle of the city, midtown, they would call it. We served a much more elderly population and demographic, a lot of nursing homes. We a little bit of interstate that we'll get there. But for the most part, it's an elderly established community. And just a lot of nursing home assisted living calls there. So I got a little mixture of that. But I fell in love with downtown, and I ended up spending my next 11 years Station 1 downtown, which was kind of special because my father, he commissioned that station in 1996 when he came out of the academy. And he spent a significant amount of time there downtown. So, and when I would come visit, my only exposure to what he did was seeing him sitting in the apparatus bay in the watch room, watching TV. All the bay doors are open. I had no idea what the trucks meant, what the bays meant, any of that. I'm just going, I'm either coming to pick up money or I'm coming to say hello because I'm home from school. Mm. So spending time down there was special to me, and I enjoyed it, seriously.
Okay. So you mentioned earlier, you know, your first assignment, it wasn't a good fit for you. So my question to you is, did you, after that experience, did you seek out the members you wanted to emulate, the members that wanted to go to work?
Well, I couldn't really find them because I didn't know what it meant. I was so new, you know, to understand who is the, what you would call the ideal fireman or officer or operator or specialist. So I had no idea what I was looking for. I knew what it meant to be able to work physically, literally in a fire situation, because I saw it. But it's like basketball players that are lovely on the court, and then off the court, they're living wild, crazy lives. You know what I mean? So that's I had a couple of people with it awesome at the Fireground. Even for the knowledge and the know-how I have now, they were awesome working firemen in a bind and a fire and whatever. But that was all I had. I didn't have the how you conduct yourself at the station. You know, what is expected of me? You know what I mean? Coming out. What direction should I take as far as classes? I mean, I didn't even start taking classes until my eighth, ninth year. You know what I mean? In the fire department, because that information I felt wasn't privy to me. Like I wasn't privy to that information. You know, I'm still the outsider visually. You know what I mean? And then with that comes, I'm going to create. People have made assumptions, and it kind of. Again, I wasn't privy to a lot of information because, you know, guys would talk like, hey, I'm taking this class in Farmville, Virginia. You know what I mean? I'm taking instructor, officer. I had no idea what the classes you even needed to take. What was a good class? You know, what should I be focused on currently with my time in? You know, should I be planning to be an operator? Should I be planning to maybe be an officer? Because their classes, of course, you know, associated with both. I just felt like I didn't have that information. So I think that once I got to Station One, and I had a captain who's now a chief. He was actually he was a lieutenant then. Chief Nichols, awesome dude, man. He suggested I go ALS, and this is about my almost my fourth year. So I'm just going into 4 years. I'm a BLS guy, and he's telling me I should try this. You know what I mean? He's telling me I think you would make a good ALS provider. And I've watched guys on scene, and I've been on quite a few different types of calls. And you would see it, even as someone who didn't necessarily know what they're looking for, you knew that something wasn't right. You know, almost like, well, if they're able to do this, I have to be able to do this. You know what I mean? And possibly better. You know what I mean? And that just was. That was my take on it. So when my officer, again, just somebody that was taking some interest in my career and how far I could potentially go and to challenge me, it felt awesome. So I'm like, and I honestly, that wasn't my intention. But when he said it, oh man, it was, yes, I'm going ALS. I had someone who actually thought I could move forward in my career, and it was super, super. That's what turned everything around for me. Seriously, just
Okay.
having an officer believe in me, and that was the beginning of my hunger, I guess, if you will, to kind of improve myself and continue to educate myself. You know what I mean? So yeah, that was a catalyst, man. Going ALS and having a crazy 6, 7, 8 years downtown after that, and then again, my father is like, "You taking the test? You gonna, you know, for lieutenant?" And I'm thinking myself, "Who the hell is gonna listen to me on this fire scene? You know, with my limited time in." So again, it took my father to say, "Yes, you can. You're more than capable. You know what I mean? You're more than capable." And I ended up doing quite well. And that was, you know, first officer's job. Lieutenant riding the ladder 10, actually went back to the place where I didn't really see a future in this place. You know what I mean? And this is where my next step in my career is going to begin at Station 10. New beginnings, new start.
Okay, before I get to the when you know when you become the lieutenant part, I'm gonna go back just a little bit. When you had those questions to yourself, like, I don't know this, I should know this, did you not want to reach out to your dad to hear his take on it, his experiences?
He was giving it. See, my dad would, he was definitely giving it. But again, I'm so young and not mature enough to go say, because he would give you which this is what you need to do, but not necessarily the how. You know what I mean? How do I get from here to here? He wasn't good at that. You know what I mean? Or he would get back to me. He would have to go talk to this guy, instead of me trying to find a source that was going to be, you know, all encompassing. where I could go to for, all right, I want to do this. How do I do this? And what do I need in order to do this? And my father just wasn't that guy, but he knew what I needed to do, but I needed some direction, some guidance.
Okay. All right. So you at some point, you said you went ALS, you got all that, and my credit to you, because to me that is not part of my wheelhouse. I am a BLS provider. I will stay a BLS provider. We don't do ALS in my department anyways. But going ALS, man, that's a lot of work too. That's no easy feat.
It was difficult, but the crazy part about it is that my teacher for my EMTI class was now chief surgeon. He was a lieutenant then. He
Okay.
actually taught my ALS intermediate eye class. And honestly, I'm gonna get joke for this, but he's the best teacher I ever had. And to this day in the fire service, there's no, you want to sit down and he makes it fun. You know what I mean? He makes it fun, but it's still very, very, it's understood that this is a learning atmosphere. But it's not that awkwardness, like, and it's not demeaning. It's like it's a environment learning rich area. So let me stop, man, because I know when the guys here see this, they'll be like, "Oh man, look at listen to this guy." You know what I mean? You know how the fellas are, man. You know how the fellas are.
I do, but when you meet somebody that understands you, that makes you feel appreciated, it's always nice to let them know that. I 100% agree. You're probably gonna receive some shit from the guys, but every single fireman's got somebody that they look up to. I'm pretty sure that that's how it goes.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I have a few individuals, you know, that I look up to, but as far as knowledge and teaching wise, surgery is one of the best. Chief
Okay.
surgeon.
So we're gonna kind of get to back to the point of when you tested for lieutenant, you actually got it, and you were assigned to ladder 10. How many years did you have under your belt when you got lieutenant?
I had just shy of 11 years, so
Okay.
almost 11 when I made lieutenant.
Okay. Upon stepping into that role, what was it like for you? Because it's a whole different realm. You're going from the back step to the
Oh
guy riding
man,
in the front right seat.
you know nothing. Danny, you know, it's different from taking orders. Now you're giving them. Seeing that bigger picture, man, I knew nothing. I knew nothing. I will not sit here and tell you that, oh man, I slid into the front seat. Man, there was so much learning going on in that front seat, from the station to the calls, the administrative side of being an officer, which people don't really understand. There's a lot that you documentation should be like in the core values of every fire department. Known to man right now, especially with NFPA out there. I mean, you got to be on top of your documentation. But just not even just that, man. It was just learning people, being in a position where not only what I'm saying can be an influence, but how I say it, you know, how do I present myself and my behavior here at the station as well as on the street for the community that we serve. I won't say it was difficult. It was different. Because I went from being that say what you want to say, fireman, ALS provider, riding a medic day night for a year and a half with his cohort. You know what I mean? Because we only had two ALS providers. So almost jaded, almost lost my compassion riding a medic down there. And people probably don't really know that. It was kind of like, all right, it's time. It's time. So I was prepared for what was to come. And again, you can't prepare yourself enough for from transitioning to a fireman to an officer. It's going to be a lot of learning. So, and that's what I had to do. I had to learn from various officers along the way. And it seemed like my time at Station 10, I couldn't keep a captain, man. We won't even get into the reasons why, but it was like I've rarely rode the ladder, Danny. I think I looked at my telestaff just before I got promoted to captain, and my entire lieutenant career, I think it was 3 to 1 the amount of hours I had on an engine versus the apparatus I was assigned to, which was ladder 10. So in that time, I was doing essentially at times both jobs. So imagine, you know, you're still learning yourself, but now I'm not only have to think in the capacity of a lieutenant who's riding this ladder and needs to understand what we our capabilities and what we can do and what we should do. I also got to be the station supervisor. That's the captain. You know what I mean? So you have to learn people. You have you got to figure out what makes this person tick and what makes this person tick. Or you know, just what how do you motivate this person? I learned a lot, man. I learned a lot in how different people are, and how you have to approach different situations given who you are trying to approach. And I think that that's a huge part of being an officer, man, is you got to see everything. And it was a lot, brother. It was a lot.
And so what made you decide to go from lieutenant to captain? Was it because you're already pretty much doing the job and you're like, hey, I might as well go for it?
You said it already. The first thing you said out of your mouth. I'm already doing the job. You know what I mean? I enjoy my station. I enjoy the crew. I was able to, you know, bring some guys up through the ranks with their operator books and acting books, man. You know what I mean? I planted my feet, and it was like, why not? I'm already doing the work. You know, who's going to run away from a pay increase for doing the same work? You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So, and that was my perspective.
Did you go straight from backstep to lieutenant, or did you also hit that driver operator role first, or were you allowed to bypass that?
No, so we are allowed to bypass that in Norfolk.
Okay.
So, again, depending on what you want to do, applying for or going for to become from firefighter lieutenant. There are a few directions you could take, right? You know, you could be an operator, which requires a whole different set of testing, requires at the time, a different number of years served. So after going ALS, again, I didn't have a real aspiration to drive an apparatus. Now, would this have changed if we purchased a tiller? Maybe, you know what I mean? Before I made lieutenant, we no longer have a tiller in the city. It would have piqued my interest more. Who knows what would have happened? But that wasn't my path, I don't think. And it wasn't even just because of, you know, not like I love driving. I love operating. But I felt like I had officers that kind of helped me along and I needed it a lot. You know what I mean? And unless you're going to engage with your personnel, no one would have known. I wouldn't even known that I could have gone this far in my career. You know what I mean? But it took someone else to kind of tap into it and believe in me. And my father's been great for all these years. But when you're in it and they're not around you immediately, you kind of still need some direction. That was kind of what I wanted to accomplish. Like, hey, I can be that guy. You know, I don't want to be in charge of people. I don't want to tell people what to do. I want to be in a position where nobody really has to feel how I felt when I came in. Mm-hmm. And that was a huge, huge, huge why for me with the becoming an officer. So
okay.
Relationships are everything, man. You know it. Relationships are everything in the fire department and in life. You know what I mean? Relationships run the world. It's you know, and how you treat people who you know. So
okay. All right. That's facts. All right. It's a two-part question. So you get to the rank of captain. My first question is, what does leadership mean to you, and what kind of leader did you want to be when you got that rank and title?
Leadership to me is being the person who a group is not only doesn't mind following into the shit, but would love to do it. That like with bells and whistles on, you know, I know I had officers like that, that just made me feel like, I don't care what we get into, we doing it. And then you had officers that you was like, I don't know if I feel comfortable, you know, going into this environment right now with look, who's looking out for me.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that leadership, that's a major part of it, man. Having people that believe in you to pretty much, have the ability to really change your life. You know what I mean? Good and bad. You know what I mean? Because ultimately, what happens to you is my responsibility. And not just, as you know, officers' duties don't stop once you clock out in the morning. You know what I mean? I got to be able to be that person outside of here. And I think I've done a pretty good job at just that. But leading is so much more than just being on the fire scene and say, hey, throw that ladder, or hey, pull that line, or yeah, give me a primary search. It's the reason why I'm where I am today, because I had leaders who actually made me feel like I can do more. I can accomplish this. So it's important to me to be that person to anyone, even if you're not assigned to me. If I see you out, we're training, we're going to station to station. Hey, if you need something, call me. If I can help you, let me know. You don't have to be under my direct supervision in order for me to want to be. If I can be of help, I'm gonna be of help. And I think people know that for the most part. So, sometimes I feel like, man, should I tell this other officer what this guy's going through, or should I maintain a level of confidentiality and kind of see if I can mitigate what I can? But I think if your heart's in the right place, then you're gonna do the right thing regardless. But that's being a leader to me, man. You're just being the guy that nobody minds following and doing it with a smile on their face.
Okay. And so when you became captain, was that, I mean, I'm assuming that's the same mindset that you had moving forward?
Absolutely, absolutely. But again, it was a challenge for me, which was good, because now not only am I going to be a captain, I'm responsible for the development of young firefighters and young recruits and rookies. But now that expectation is there. But now I'm under the regime, the leadership of Chief Sergi, who is very training intensive kind of chief kind of guy, which is great. And I didn't come from that background. So I think it all came together perfectly. I think it came together perfectly, because I have to elevate my game now. You know what I mean? Not just me, the folks underneath me. And he's gonna make sure that we're prepared, and it's what he should be doing. So training was huge for me, Danny. Like, 'cause I had officers that kind of like, you get this that 5 to 7 year, like, I've been doing this. You know what I mean? I know what I'm doing. It's the run of the mill. We're gonna kick the door in, we're gonna find a fire. Or I'm going to hop on this ambulance, I'm gonna go to a respiratory distress, and we're gonna give us some albuterol, and we're gonna book it to the hospital. It was like almost complacency, and it make an officer, especially the captain, it was like, all right, it's incumbent upon myself. Like, I got to be about my shit because I'm teaching new people. And I got a guy who's going to expect nothing less. So the challenge, that was my challenge. And I think that was, again, same mindset, but let's step it up now. Let's step it up.
All right. With that being said, in your opinion, what does the term aggressive mean to you?
Aggressive. Well, it's not a couple of neighboring departments around here. I would say Norfolk is the standard. I had to throw that in there. Aggressiveness to me is having a task and getting it done no matter what, but still with a risk benefit kind of mindset. It's being confident to make that decision in a millisecond or a couple seconds. Making decisions, I think it's being comfortable with the knowledge that you hopefully have acquired and practiced over the years. And utilizing that, the know-how, the experience, the confidence to go out and execute as most effectively and efficiently as possible. That is aggressive to me. Knowing what needs to be done, coming up with a plan, going to do it with this calculated risk, because you know this job is nothing but calculated risks, and getting it done. You know what I mean? And that's crazy because that was our chant in my squad five in class TRFA 122. That was the motto. That's how we started our day. Get it done. No excuses. Get it done. But do it in a way so you don't get yourself killed or
Right,
others.
right.
And that's the technique. That's the skill. That's the whole, I kind of know what to expect, but still expect the unexpected is that's the fun part about this job. And like I do, it's kind of getting away from that a little bit. You know what I mean? The aggressiveness, and it's become way more calculated now. You know what I mean? And a lot of times for good reason. I get it. But guys signed up to be firefighters, guys and gals signed up to be firefighters. So we want to, there's a something is off about us. You know what I mean? The cliche folks is running out, we're running in, right? There's a part of us that needs that. I need that adrenaline. I need to do something. Man, I think that that's one of the vital characteristics that someone should, you got to have that in you. You got to have that in you. I don't know, man. I think aggressive is just it's really a mindset, but it's being able to do it. It's being able to do it and doing it.
Okay.
It's my
No,
how
you're
I see it,
good. You're
brother.
good. You're good. Okay. Coming into the service, you mentioned you definitely looked different. You didn't look the norm, the part. So my question to you, and I'd like to ask the guests of our complexion, how did it feel? Because for me, coming into the fire service, you're surrounded by it's predominantly white dominated field, right? And so
Absolutely. Absolutely.
when you come in, did you feel any sort of I don't want to say pressure, but a little bit of the spotlight shined on you? Because you mentioned as you walked in, because you didn't know any different, you walked in and it was like, who's this person? So has your mindset changed? And I ask that because for any future firefighter who is not of the who is not white is what I'm trying to say. Like, what advice can you give to
Yeah, just
them?
say it, brother. It was not white. Absolutely. I would say that feeling was like more of a uncomfortable, like almost imposter syndrome right away. I don't belong here. Like clearly, clearly I'm looking around. It's like I wouldn't hang out with any of these people. You know what I mean? That's what I'm thinking. Myself. Like that's how I looked at it, Danny. That's how I look at it. It's funny, but I'm just it's just that level of like it's like going to a new school. It's like you don't know anybody. And luckily I had who I call OG, man. He another brother, man, but like 20 years older than me. So he'd been through some stuff and he's from New York as well. And it was like, man, that I think that saved me, Danny. I think his presence saved me, saved my career, because I would have been gone had it not been for him. I created this bond with him almost like a father son, in the academy, and that's the only thing that made me feel comfortable. And the crazy part is that the entire time in this academy, Danny, this gentleman and I used this country, North Carolinian accent, bro. I'm talking thick. You hear me? Thick. Just twang. Danny, we use this accent all the way for the entire 8 months, that to the point where some people thought we really spoke like that. And that honestly, that's what made the academy like fun for me, was I needed to make it fun. I like, and that's how I did it. And the crazy part is that the instructors never corrected us. They never, I don't know if they thought we spoke like that, but they never, we never got in trouble for it. Just having somebody there to kind of it's always good to have people around you that look like you. You know what I mean? That you can relate to. Yeah, it's human nature, no matter what color you are. So It was a very awkward feeling though, bro. I almost made the decision there. Like, nah, I'm not doing this. You know what I mean? I'm not doing this. But yeah, I'm glad. Again, he was a huge shout out to my OG man.
No, I can understand your sentiments on it, because I remember back when I started, I was the only one. I was the only chocolate chip in a sea of milk, is what I call it. And
Yes.
when it came time to do we after PT, we had to shower before class, and so I'm walking in this locker room and I'm like, okay. And I look at one of the dudes and I'm like, so are we all showering together? And he's like, yeah. Have you
That caught me.
ever? He's like, have you ever not showered? Like, I was like, I've showered,
Right.
but not around a bunch of dudes.
By myself, right? Oh
Yes.
man.
And so I
Oh,
asked him. I said, hey man, are you gonna wear your boxers while you shower? And he's like, no, I'm not. I was like, all right, I guess I'm
no,
doing
sir. No, sir,
this.
I'm not. No, sir, I'm not. Who does that? He looked at you like you was the weird one. Who does that? You
He
know what I mean?
did.
Drop your drawers. That's basically what he's saying. You know what I mean? Drop your drawers. And that was, yes, man. I used to try to be the last one getting out of the showers. You know what I mean? I'm not comfortable with this. You know, I feel like I can't even turn my neck in here. It was new for me, man. That was seriously a culture shock for me, man. Y'all are very comfortable.
Yes,
But you know,
they
move
are.
past it. But you have to. You know what I mean? It was, yeah. It was
Okay.
different for me, brother.
Okay. All right. With that being said, you mentioned in your opinion that Norfolk is a very aggressive, proactive, department in Virginia. So, with that being said, how
Absolutely.
important is having standards and communication?
So are you talking like chain of command, or are you talking about in general? Like, are you talking specifically about?
All right, so communication amongst the rank and file. So I've always said successful organizations, departments that you see, man, like their communication is top tier. There is no room for interpretation. It's this is how it's going to be. You jump out of chain of command, somebody will be on you. So how important is that?
Oh man, I think great question. So I didn't understand the importance of it until I became an officer. You know what I mean? Because everything as a firefighter is going up, it's going up, it's disappearing into the cloud. You know what I mean? You hear something when you hear something. And then with the information that's come back down to you, can I believe it? Is this it does this merit me to put my eggs in this basket? You know what I mean? The credibility of things gets lost on the way down, you know. But once you become an officer, I think it's, oh man, it's vital. It's vital. And we have some battalion chiefs and high-ranking officers that absolutely maintain the integrity of chain of command and in communication. And not just upward, but downward. You know that there is transparency in our department. And again, it depends on who you're stationed under, what shift your own battalion you're in, because you know, three battalions, three shifts. We got nine different departments. You know what I mean? So, I think that I'm lucky enough to be in a situation where the communication and the transparency of the communication and clarity of it is great right now. And again, you know. Everybody's not going to agree with that, and again, that's based on your own personal experience. But I think it's vitally important because it establishes trust between the ranks. You know what I mean? And that structure is necessary because when you're fielding questions and emails, and you got this department that you're supposed to be emailing to, and this group is mad at you because you didn't send, you know, it's something that you got to stay on top of as an officer. And I didn't know how important it was until I became really a lieutenant. The organization does not flow and does not operate without communication and some transparency in it, because morale, you know, morale is like it's like somebody on the borderline of being cardioverted. You know what I mean? You're seeing runs of tachycardia on the monitor, and you're like, are we about to shock this person? Are we about to cardiovert this person? You know what I mean? Morale can be And unfortunately, that sometimes makes the job. You know what I mean? If morale is low, then performance is going to be down. And I think that I'm in a battalion in a situation where we try to maintain that,
Got
and that's through communication and transparency.
it. Okay. outside training, what's your take on getting outside your bubble, getting outside your department and learning new things?
Again, huge importance. I had the privilege of being an assessor for the Orange County, Florida's Captain's Assessment promotional exam not too long ago. And being exposed to just the that old saying is nine different ways to skin a cat. You notice that there is not one way to perform this job and perform it effectively and efficiently. And I think it's fascinating to learn. Again, listening to communication, because we're not there, right? We got these radio calls and we got these scenarios that we've heard, but we're not there, and it's totally different. You know what I mean? When you're there, and I think that again, listening to how people communicate and how they essentially perform the task that we're doing the same thing they're doing, but they do it this way. You know what I mean? Why do they do it this way? What is it better than us? Can we let's give it a shot. And there's some officers who are traditionalists, they're gonna be opposed, but these new group of guys and gals, they're so open and so they're like a sponge, maybe we could throw something else in the toolbox. You know what I mean? And I think that it can really make you, I think you need that in order to be a well-rounded fireman. Is exposure to how things can be done in other places or how they do it in other places. I think it's super important, man. I don't think that, because you can't learn from, so like learning, we talked about that. Like there's certain, like in school, there's certain people who can explain something to you a certain way, and you're going to be more apt to comprehend what they're saying, right? Same in the fire service. Some officers don't work for some recruits and firefighters. Some firefighters aren't good for this officer's style, or the senior guy at the station. Maybe the senior guy don't want to do nothing at the station in this battalion. You need to go somewhere where the senior guy is still invested in his crew and the new people. And then you may feel like, man, this is a whole different place now. This is a whole different place now. And that's what happened for me, was just being open to new ideas and new perspectives on the job. And that's what it is. It's perspectives that allow us to complete a task, hopefully is to the best of our ability. And I think that is super important, man, to get out there, take some classes in these different areas, man. Even if you take some tech classes, even if you don't want to be a rescue guy or gal, take some of the classes, because the way our department is, you don't know who's showing up first. Diversify your think tank, your Rolodex, because it's you don't know what company you're going to be arriving on the scene, man. And you could get started. You know what I mean? You could get started.
In your opinion, what do you see the fire service doing good on, and what can they improve on when it comes to recruitment and retention?
Oh man. Well, first thing people shout with retention is pay more money, more money, more money, more money. Money is essentially, almost a fix all be all, but everyone doesn't have the money. You know what I mean? Not every department has resources like the next. So I kind of take that off the table in my mind. Like the money, money, money. Yeah. I'm not, because if you get wrapped up in that, you're going to just piss yourself off, because everyone's living life, everybody has financial responsibilities. I just refuse. No, I'm not going to get in it. I'm not going to go down that road. Like, we do know that recruitment is, I want to say, become way more difficult in today's, day and age, not only from the perspective of getting the applicants in there, but navigating the 9 months of 25 different people being introduced to something that they may not even fathom before. You know what I mean? So retention is vital. And again, I don't have the answer. That's why I'm not an admin, Danny. Like I like to ride the fire truck. I just I know that it's difficult right now with retention. And again, my department has been working diligently to kind of rectify some of those situations, man. And we have a union that's doing pretty good right now. So, but I think that I can't even say that. I don't know if retention would improve if the knowledge about the job improved. I think because you know they're always moving the goalposts. You know what I mean? Because
right.
what's good for right now isn't
right.
good for next year. You
right.
know what I mean? It's no different than the medication is on the ambulance. Hey, we've been given this paralytic for like 6 years. Nobody said nothing, and then all of a sudden now we're using rock. You know what I mean? We're you know, and then we find out, like, this is just an example. We find out this drug we were giving out so freely in RSIs has an adverse effect on dialysis patients. You know what I mean? It's like, all right, we were doing it this way. There's no longer the right way. This isn't right anymore. It's like the goal, and especially in fire department, the goalpost is constantly moving. So in order to retain people, you got to stay ahead of the times. And I think it's difficult right now with this generation. You know what I mean? There is a difference in the generations. We can all see it. It was a different time. I won't be that old guy and say, you know, how, you know, things were, but you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You got to stay flexible. You got to be open, and you got to have some sort of, some knowledge as to, again, people, how do I approach this situation? You know, how do we get the most out of this individual, and so that they become an asset for not only our department but the community we serve? It's difficult.
Okay, so if let's just say, you know, you come to a high school and I'm a student, and if I ask you, or not even that, if let's just say I'm one of your distant cousins, and I'm like, hey, you're with the fire department. Tell me some things that could intrigue me into becoming a firefighter. What would you tell that person?
You're definitely going to have fun. I would definitely express that this is probably the greatest job in the world, in the fact that you're going to meet like so many different types of people.
Right.
You're going to learn from and about so many different types of people, not just the people that you're serving next to or alongside, but the community, the folks that you serve. But I also, you know, I would be honest and say that this is probably mentally one of the toughest jobs that you can take. You know what I mean? And I think that, again, I was not privy to that. I had no, you know, mental health back in 2007, 2008. And, you know, my father, the rock himself, you know what I mean, who doesn't emote. I joke, he does, but you know what I mean? He's a very stoic dude, man. And that's where I think I'm a chip off the old block. So being thrust into this profession, man, and seeing the things that you see, you don't even realize what it's doing to you. You know what I mean?
Right.
So I would definitely, you know, now let people know to be mindful of your mental health. If you're already struggling, this may not be the gig for you. But if you are willing to kind of work at your challenges, you know, this job can be very rewarding because you're helping somebody else who's essentially in the same position or could be in the same position as you. I think you gotta want to be a you gotta want to be a person who is stepping up to the plate no matter what, you know.
Yeah, I like that. Yeah. Because I mean, they're,
and that's hard sometimes.
Exactly. That's the thing. Like, you're going to get thrown some curveballs, and it's like, what's your next move?
Right. And express that, you know, no secret, you know, running the draft. You know what I mean? Let these people know what they're going to get themselves into. And, you know, again, that will cut down on retention. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Or increase retention because people are not being thrust into these these environments, these situations, without any type of heads up. I think, I don't know, man. It's almost like folks don't know what they're signing up for these days, but
Okay. As far as physical fitness, you mentioned early in your career you had that coach, when you were an athlete, like, hey, physical fitness is important, and it definitely correlates to the fire service. So what's your take on that?
absolutely. Well, you learn out very quickly when you start crawling on your legs in the academy. This is a different type of fitness and agility. You learn very quickly. This is not basketball fit. This is not football fit. This is a whole nother beast. I didn't even know my elbow and my left knee could hurt at the same time. Why are they hurting at the same time? You know what I mean? Like, it was something that again, when I came in, fitness was there, but it wasn't like today. Like, I mean, guys, now we have so many different ways to monitor our fitness with these watches and these apps and these these new devices, Nordic, whatever they are. My father has one he never uses. You're literally running with some. You're riding a bike with somebody looking at you. Fitness is has become something that, again, I realized later in my career. I always felt like, what I did outside of here, because a fireman always has a part-time gig. I've done concrete construction. I've done residential irrigation systems, sprinklers and wells. I was an Amazon driver for another retired Virginia Beach captain just next door to us. He had an Amazon company for 2 years. I did that for 2 years. So I was getting my steps in. I always felt like, what I did outside of the department was sufficient until until we had a fire not too long ago. Well, I would say like five years ago, and I felt towards the end of the call, I felt winded, man. I felt like, no, this shouldn't. I shouldn't. I'm getting older. I don't think I realized that. I'll be 40 this year. So right around 35, man, things start breaking down. You know what I mean? Like you're not catching your breath as quickly as you once did. So you wake up the next day and this muscle don't even want to work because you was helping drag some hose and you used to just thoughtless. Let's get it done. Now I have to be smart about what I'm doing, but I also have to maintain that cardio. So huge importance, man. And I get motivated for my young guys because this generation, one thing they're going to do, they're going to take care of their body. You know what I mean? Those who are in this profession, you know what I mean? Because they've seen the numbers, hopefully. Now they've seen what cardiovascular disease is and how that's the number one killer of firefighters in the nation. So they're coming into it with at least with that. Like, it won't get me. You know what I mean? So and their workout regimens is just, sometimes they make me feel bad. Like, I need to get on this treadmill today. You know what I mean? Like, I come out here after lunch and they're out here doing it. We just recently got ice baths distributed to all the stations. They've been asking me for a week and a half now. Cap, you going? No, I'm not. I'm not. You enjoy that. I have other ways. You know what I mean? I have other ways. Being cold is not one of my things. You know what I mean? So yeah, but no, we actually have a very, very progressive department when it comes to our fitness. They're on top of it. You ask for something, you're getting it. You know what I mean? And that could be a little bit of covering the ass too, just like every department. Like, they ask for it. You know what I mean? Now something happens and now they're looking at, well, why weren't these things in place? Why wasn't this an option for such and such and such and such? So fitness is huge, man. Fitness is huge. And it's like fun for me now. Like, I want to get out there and see what I can do as far as running. I haven't ran 2, 3 miles in years, Danny. This past, I want to say, 2 weeks, man. I'm over here testing myself, man. I don't know why I did it, but I recently almost thought my shins was going to pop out of my legs, because it was such a long time between running, and that I just hadn't done it. So my legs, my feet hitting that pavement, man. Oh man, I thought I was going to have to call my girlfriend to come get me, but I was dedicated because I could have turned around. I could have turned around, but I was dedicated to completing this 3 miles, man. And I just limped home, bro. But I felt so good about it, and I think that I didn't think that you could feel good about working out. I hated running. Why am I running? What is the purpose of me running? There has to be something chasing me in order for me to run. It's just not something I consider fun. But you see the guys, the young guys working out, man, and gals are just like, I got to do something. So yeah, I'm trying to hike it up a bit, brother. I'm trying to stay on par with the young guys, at least be able to be on their heels, through the front door. So
Okay, love it. Love it. My last question I always like to ask the guests, and I think I know what you're gonna say, but where would you like to see yourself before you decide to hang it up?
Listen, I love what I do, man. I love the hopping on and off the truck. That's the job to me. That right there is the job. That is what balances out the paper pushing side, the administrative stuff, the know befores and the target solutions, and you got to document this, and oh, we got to do this, which is all good. It's necessary for a functioning department. You know what I mean? So I'm gonna do my job, but in order for me not to lose myself, I got to still be able to hop off this fire truck and hope there's some fire behind this front door. You know what I mean? That's what makes it fun for me. So before it's all said and done, chief job, ride around in the car and tell people what they need to do from the front seat. You know what I mean? With the windshield between you and the scene. That's not something I want to do yet. That's not something I want to do yet, man. And again, I have some great chiefs that I learned a lot from, man. And I don't know. It's like when you look in their eye, they don't have that spark anymore. That engine company work, that ladder work, that forcible entry. You know what I mean? It's something that you got to do. If this is what you love, and any opportunity you get to do that, man, it just makes the job that much sweeter. So I think that before I leave, possibly battalion chief, who knows? But I'm happy in the position I'm in right now, man. You know what I mean? I love getting on and off the truck. I love seeing guys develop and get better at the craft. As you stay being a student of the game, I think it's vital, man. I think you can make it fun depending on what kind of officer you have, and that's what I strive to be, man. A guy that listen, we're gonna get it done. We're gonna have some fun, but we're gonna get it done. We're gonna be able to, we're gonna be able to say that, professional. We're professional, yet we're approachable, we're respectful, and dependable. I think that's all. That's professionalism right there, brother. You know what I mean? And having anybody in the world be thankful that you showed up on scene. You know what I mean? That's tough to do. That's tough to do, man, because you can't please everybody. You know
That's
what I mean?
fact.
You look at a client, patient wrong, and you know, before you get back to the station, you sitting at the chief. Is that your is it in your office? In your office, sitting in behind your desk. Like, close the door. Let's have a talk. You know what I mean? Like, yeah, man. But man, I'm still having fun as a captain, bro. I think at least for the time that you know me. Yeah, I might sneak out as a chief, but I'll be known better as a fire captain.
Okay. Engine or ladder work? What's your flavor?
Engine work. I might be brainwashed, but engine work is the fun work for me. Ladder work is cool. Obviously, inherently more dangerous than engine company work. I think that aspect of it I like. Everybody loves the vertical ventilation of it when you get assigned to do it, when you're allowed to do it. But engine work, I feel like we set the tone as the first line goes, as goes the fire. You know what I mean? Like that's and I again that's some Chief Sergey shit, man. I don't even realize it. You know what I mean? That's that he done put in my head. You know what I mean? Like as the first engine company, the first actions, the first move dictate how well or how bad this fire is gonna be. And yeah, I've been indoctrinated, bro. So engine work for sure, hands down.
Okay. Well, one question I did forget to ask you. The first time you were a part of live fire training, man, what were the thoughts going through your head?
Excitement, number one. Excitement always. Whether it was the anticipation of seeing fire or just being in a rollover Connex box, having to mimic rollovers, excitement, intrigue. But my first thought, specifically as it pertains to the burn building, I remember thinking, "We're gonna get in here. We're gonna get these dummies out of here. We're gonna spray whatever fire they tell us. We're gonna get out." That's not how the academy works. You're gonna traverse a few floors. You're gonna sit down. If you got good officers, squad leaders, they're gonna make you sit down and feel that heat. And I remember the first time that my PPE jacket felt like it was about to melt through my shoulders. I said, maybe this is not something that I want to do. Because up until that point, you go 7.5 months without even the most fire you see is spraying the extinguisher
Okay.
on your Class A. You know what I mean? It's 3, 4 feet away. You get in there and that fire hits you, baby. That heat. It's like, whoa. And of course, you know, the taller individuals, we had to crawl anyway, but that, you know, just, oh man. It was something that I had to learn to love. You know what I mean? It can get this hot. You know what I mean? Because your body automatically is telling you, get the hell out of here. What are you doing? Your heartbeat is increasing and we're not doing anything. We're just sitting here. That was probably the, yeah, that was my first thought, bro. Everything else was fun up until that heat hit my shoulders. Seriously. And then I had to reevaluate. You know, we went outside, went to the cool. I'm like talking to myself, like, damn, that shit got hot. You know what I mean? Because that was the first time that I knew what the suits could do. You know what I mean? How well they protected us. And then you come out, you got reflectors that are burned off. It's like that. I was in there. It's something you wouldn't like in the beginning. You can't even compute. It's like, how did I survive that? But you figure out you what you're made of, man. And a lot of people find out, you know, that they're made of a lot more than what they thought coming into this. So yeah, the discovery was always the best, brother.
I had to ask because I remember, I back then, and looking at it now, like I never gave instructors credit, like live burn instructors. And after a
Yeah.
while, man, I would watch them come in and out, and I'm just like these dudes are fucking. I mean, I'm all right. So I'm just gonna be transparent. My first time. It was hot. I remember sitting there like, am I in this? Like, can I do this? And then
Right.
like watching the same instructor just come out, swap bottles, and go back in. I tell you, in my head, I'm like, these fucking white guys. Like, I was like, fucking A, man. Like, these dudes are legit. And then now
Bro,
I'm looking at it and
yeah.
dude, the respect I have for live burn instructors.
Yeah. Yeah, bro, with that smoke coming off their gear and then they pop the mask off, they got these big ass Monterey Jack thick mustache. This is, you know, it's like, bro, who are these people? Who are these people that can withstand this heat? And I'm down here crawling, you standing up. Nah. Yeah, it was different. It was different, bro, to see that for the first time.
Actually, one more question because I did want to ask you this. So with your upbringing and with how your father raised you and your mother raised you, would you say with you being a captain for the fire department in which you never really thought you were potentially going to make it, do you think your dad had both your parents, but especially your dad, because he was a firefighter, like do you feel like he has that sense of accomplishment, like he's truly proud of you for essentially kind of following in his footsteps?
Yes, for sure. And again, he's not cool on just provide this information. You know what I mean? This is a guy who barely grew up with a father figure. So for the things that he's done for me, man, and the pride he's instilled in me, and like I can just see it when he's talking to his friends. You know your folks. You know how they engage with people, and when it's bad, it's bad. When it's good, it's good. And honestly, when he talks about me to his friends, that's where I see it. I see that my father's proud of me. You know what I mean? And when I made captain, it was like anybody that came in the house, it was like, oh man, he a captain now. Like before, nobody could talk about anything. And he just, first thing he would say, yeah, you made captain. You made captain. So that's how I know. You know what I mean? Unprovoked, dissemination of information. Just, yeah, he's a captain now. Like, shit was kind of pissed me off after a while. Like, bro, can we find out how, you know what I mean? Find out how the cuz is doing before you start throwing out information? But yeah, no, I definitely see it. It's the best feeling in the world, man. It's the best feeling in the world. Seriously, can't describe it. To hear him say it and show it, I feel like I did something right. You know what I mean?
Awesome. Kamal, I have to. Well, first off, well, yes, I want to thank you, but also I want to. I'm gonna shout out the plug, Chief Sergi. Chief Sergi reached out.
Yes, sir.
He sent me a text. He's like, "Hey, you got a minute?" I said, "Yeah." And he was like, he called. He was like, "I got a guy for you." And I was like, "All right." And then immediately, what I did, I typed in your name, And the video of you and your father popped up from that the fire department did. And I watched it and I was like, awesome. Okay. And then that's when I reached out to you. But I want to say thank you to Chief Sergi and thank you for accepting the invite, coming on and talking shop, because I'm sure you were like, why me? Like, I'm nobody special, but I love the message
Absolutely.
that you
My
got.
exact words. My exact words. Like, and it's coming from Chief Sergi. You know what I mean? Like, he's what convention is he not known at? Who the f why me? So, and he plays a lot too. So I was kind of like questioning at first, like, who is this person that Chief Surgeon has set me up to do a podcast with? So it was I definitely had no idea, but I'm so thankful, bro, that you reached out to me. Seriously. I think we need, and again, this is necessary. This is, people need to see that, yes, if you, however you grew up, don't worry, matter where you grew up, what you look like, if you want to do it, there are avenues to do it. And I think this is, we need to emphasize that, bro. The fact that you have a platform like this in order for you to accomplish that, I'm thankful to be a part of it. I'm honored to be a part of it, and I appreciate the invite, my friend.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Like I said, I truly appreciate it and I thoroughly enjoyed this interview. Thank you.
Hey, thank you.
If any of the listeners out there are or know of a great firefighter who embodies the principles of being a great communicator, goal-oriented, hardworking, humble, passionate, and professional, regardless of rank, career, or volunteer, contact me at studentofthegamefirepodcast@gmail.com. Until next time, stay focused, stay committed, and stay safe.